This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. Sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Welcome to Atheist or Agnostic or Other Freethinker. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio, your antidote to the religious right.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. You said August, Freethinkers? Because this is the month of August. This is the weekend of August the 6th, 2011. And this show is produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF. We are a national state church watchdog. We are also the country's largest association of freethinkers, and we like that word freethinker. It's a single word, freethinker and freethought, which is kind of an umbrella term for all of us who don't believe, whether we call ourselves atheists, as most of our members do, or agnostics, or igtheists, or what else would they call themselves, secular deists, or born-again pagans, or whatever you call yourself. We all disbelieve in the same God. We have almost 17,000 members nationwide right now. And as I said, we broadcast here in Madison, Wisconsin. We also broadcast in Atlanta, in Grand Rapids, in Monterey, in New York City, if you want to get up at 5 in the morning. And of course, we podcast throughout the entire natural cosmos.
We have two young guests today. Later in the show, we'll be speaking with Jessica Ahlquist, a high school student who will also be speaking at our convention, accepting one of our student activist awards of $1,000. Jessica is the main Brave plaintiff in an ACLU lawsuit challenging a prayer at her school. It happens to be painted on the walls of the auditorium at Cranston High School in Cranston, Rhode Island.
And then in a few minutes, we'll talk with Arash Khosrowshahi. And I don't know if I said that correctly. He just nodded at me. He's in the studio with us today, but we know him as Ash. He is a second-year law student at the University of California, Berkeley, who has very kindly and generously spent his summer at the offices of the Freedom From Religion Foundation working with us as a legal intern to correct violations of the separation between religion and government.
Before we bring Ash onto the show, and he's in the studio, as Dan said, which is always fun, we want a quick update about what happened with FFRF versus Governor Rick Perry, our newest federal lawsuit. You may know that FFRF sued Governor Perry in federal court. We tried and asked to get a restraining order to stop him from acting as the official instigator, host, sponsor, greeter, and endorser of today's Evangelical Christian Prayer Rally at Reliance Stadium. And we asked a judge to stop Perry's robocalls, his video welcoming, his letter in his official capacity as governor, inviting people to attend this Christian event. And we asked that his proclamation be rescinded, calling August 6th a day of fasting and prayer for the nation.
And you know that Governor Perry has been praying for rain because Texas is in a big drought. And I think maybe his prayers were answered because I was in Ohio last week for the Secular Student Alliance Conference, and it rained in Ohio. So maybe that was God. Maybe God has bad eyesight, but it rained somewhere. You may have heard the news. The lawsuit that we took was thrown out. The restraining order that we were seeking was denied by Judge Gray H. Miller, who is a conservative Bush appointee. Basically, we were denied standing to sue with a very bad argument. But first, let's listen to some coverage by Houston 13 Eyewitness News, which is an ABC TV show about that loss of ours.
A group of atheists and agnostics took on Governor Perry, and Governor Perry has won. That fight ended up in federal court today, started when Perry sponsored a day of prayer. Eyewitness News reporter Tom Abrams is live downtown with more. Tom?
Eric, the judge ruled that the plaintiffs who were suing Governor Perry really didn't have the standing to do so. And after considering the measure in his chambers after just half an hour, he dismissed the case. Now, the plaintiffs are all members of a group called Freedom From Religion Foundation. They had argued that Governor Perry's involvement in and promotion of a religious rally at Reliant Stadium on August 6th violates the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment to the Constitution. The governor's lawyers from the Attorney General's office argued that since there was nothing that forced the plaintiffs to attend or punished them for not attending, because of that, there was no cause to sue and no injury. And the judge agreed.
I am surprised because this case was so far to one side. That is, you had a governor who, in the name of his governor of Texas office, was promoting a specific religion at a huge event.
A spokesman for Governor Perry and a spokesman for the group that's organizing this rally say they are very pleased with the judge's ruling today. They consider it a major victory. The plaintiff's attorneys, meantime, tell us they are considering an appeal to the Fifth Circuit. Reporting live from downtown, Tom Abrams, 13 Eyewitness News.
And I was there in the courtroom. That was not a fun moment when he said, the judge said, there may be some remedy for this, but it is not in my courtroom. We are considering an appeal. We're considering other options.
Don't we need to point out, though, that we did not lose the case on the merits. The judge did not. The judge did not say that what the governor is doing is constitutional. So he just dodged it by ruling on standing.
You just didn't have the right to sue. And where we felt this was very wrong is that we had plaintiffs who received robocalls reaching into their very home, picking up the phone. This is Governor Perry inviting you to this prayer rally. I mean, this is very different. So Dan and I and our other legal intern, Taylor Myers, will all be there at the Reliant Stadium today, protesting with other FFRF members and Texans against the gubernatorial support for a religious event, a pervasively sectarian Christian event, co-hosted with the governor by the American Family Association, a notorious ultra-right wing evangelical Christian group. And so next week we'll have some updates for you on some surprises that we have today that we'll be unveiling at the event to make our point to beware prayer by pious politicians and to keep religion out of government.
And maybe we'll have some of the brand new song I'm working on to play that I'm going to play at that event. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio, and we'll be right back to catch up with one of the Freedom From Religion Foundation's summer legal interns. Stay tuned.
Hi, my name is Bob Collins. I'm from Spring Lake, Michigan, on the other side of the lake from Chicago here. And I'm pleased to be on Free Thought Radio.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. And we're very pleased to welcome in the studio with us one of four legal interns at the Freedom From Religion Foundation this summer. And we spoke with Taylor a couple of weeks ago. Today, we're going to speak with Ash Khosrowshahi. And he is from the law school in Berkeley. He spent 10 weeks with us very productively. And what we like about it is no cost to the foundation. He's donating his time. You will have a great reward in heaven, Ash, for all of your sacrifice, let me say. I might add, this is quite amazing. So, Ash, welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I was just kidding about the heaven part.
I would hope so.
So, first, Ash, I know that you are an atheist, but I understand you're one of the only atheists in your family, and you have a very interesting family background. What is that?
Right. So, my father is Persian from Iran, and he comes from a Shiite Muslim background. My mom is a Midwesterner from a small town, Keokuk, Iowa, and she grew up from a Catholic background. So I was pretty much raised to be educated with both Shiite Islam and Catholic Christianity. And then my parents said, well, when he gets older, he'll decide to pick one of these two, and I chose probably the worst option according to them. But
you just didn't want to make one of your parents angry, right? You just picked neither.
Right.
You know, that
equal opportunity.
That is very common when you have a quote-unquote mixed marriage. Right. The kids will often just say, well, forget about it. You know, they can see, well, if both gods, you know, if one god's supposed to be right and there's two gods involved here or two religions,
right,
how can they both be right?
It was interesting, too, because when I was raised, they taught me generally to believe in God. And it was kind of strange how they maneuvered around the fact that their religions were incompatible with each other. So they would just say, oh, dad calls God Allah, and I call God God, and Jesus is his son. And it was
what about Muhammad there?
Right. Muhammad was God's prophet. It was a strange hybrid of some sort of like liberal interpretation of each religion and try to get me to understand how both might be legitimate, either, even though in actuality, neither of them are.
But it is kind of amazing that they got along. I mean, that they're tolerant enough with each other and their love for each other and the family. I mean, that's kind of a story right there.
Oh, it didn't last forever, though.
Oh. Okay.
They're no longer together.
Oh, is that right? So I wonder why. Well, maybe there's a reason for that.
And so when did you decide you were an atheist?
Oh, around the age of 16, I started thinking about it more, and I didn't really have any real philosophically well-developed reasons why. I just kind of had the feeling that this idea of Jesus coming, or this idea of Muhammad, or at that point I had learned about other religions too. It just seemed too simplistic of an explanation considering how complex and amazing the universe is. So I just pretty much disregarded it. And then throughout college, when I was working towards my philosophy degree, I spent a significant amount of time learning a lot of theology and honing in reasons to not believe. So now I have a much better understanding, although I'm always learning.
And you were active with some of the secular groups. What campus were you on?
Right. So in college, I was at the University of California, Davis, and I was involved with the Agnostic and Atheist Student Association, which is still going on. I was the president. Let's see, I forget which years it was. I think it was 2007 to 2008. I might have that wrong, though. I'd have to go back and check. And we just do what most other college secular organizations do, have meetings, try to get some speakers, try to generate some dialogue.
And so that's how you found out about FFRF, because you had followed Dan's debates, right?
Right. That's right.
Well, so I was there for a debate or a speech. I forget what it was, but you had a huge group there. You had a very successful, a lot of students organized in a packed room. I don't know how many hundreds were there, but it was quite impressive.
Yeah, it was about, I was there too when you came to speak. That was a year after me. I think it was about 500 or so.
Yeah, it was, and they sold all the books before the doors basically opened, so that was kind of interesting.
So, well, let's talk about some of the things that you've been working on, and the most recent is, it hasn't been announced on Free Thought Radio, this really a great victory, I think, or a very satisfying victory. And why don't you tell us about it in Columbus, Ohio?
Right. So I guess some of your listeners and members already know about the church that took down our billboard in Columbus, Ohio, which was, I guess, for the student campaign.
It was our Out of the Closet campaign. And we had a student, Dylan, who said, I can be good without God.
Right. And then we pretty much decided to do a little bit of research on this church, because we had figured, well, if they have a billboard on their church, why aren't they being taxed for it? Because that doesn't seem like a really religious type of activity that usually seems to be exempted under the statutes. So we researched some Ohio tax law, and we found out that, oh yeah, their billboard wouldn't qualify. So then we notified their county auditor, and they went ahead and took steps to make sure that the billboard was exempt.
So we just got that phone call, what, late last week? Or
right.
So they're going to be paying. Do you remember how much they're going to owe? It's not very much.
It's about, the billboard takes up a small portion of the church property, so it's only about $186 a year. But that's not the best part. The best part was that during the course of figuring out whether or not the auditors were going to split the billboard off from the rest of the church, we determined that for one way or for somehow or another, one of the church basically owns other properties somehow in its name right next to the church. And that property houses a dental office, houses a realty company, houses a child daycare service center. And We're not sure entirely whether or not that's being counted under their tax-exempt status, but we would make an inquiry. And if it turns out that they actually have been utilizing their church's tax-exempt status for all these non-church activities, they might have to pay significantly more taxes in the future.
It was about how much? Do you remember? $15,000 or something? Or?
I do remember that they did purchase the property for around $550,000. So however much Ohio would tax for that, I'm not entirely sure.
Well, so that church just might regret calling the billboard company and saying, you can't put up this free thought billboard on our property.
Right. I know that most states say that a church can only exempt the property that it's actually using for its religious activities. They can't cover the whole thing with a parking lot for 500 cars when they only have 100 people coming there. They have to justify, this is our sanctuary and this is our church-run daycare. So you might have something there.
Well, and congratulations on getting the billboard onto the tax rolls. I mean, I thought that was a really nice victory. So you wanted to talk about some of the other things that you've been working on. And there's something out of the Southern California.
Right. So we received a number of complaints recently about a bunch of cities around Southern California that have had a lot of invocations and prayers given before the city council meetings. That's typically, we get a lot of complaints like that. And Southern California typically has a reputation for being a little bit more conservative. One of the letters I drafted was one for one particular city, and they had a lot of, in fact, almost all the prayers were constantly devoted towards Jesus.
Sectarians,
particularly Christianity. And there are other members of different religious groups in that area that never got to speak at all. So we've basically sent them letters saying that you can't do that. And then apparently the Alliance Defense Fund sent letters to them after we sent letters to them saying that, oh, no, it's totally fine. You can totally give sectarian prayers, which is not the state of the law. It's just not. And we are planning on finding some way to respond to those cities, telling them that you really need to stop because what you're doing is just violating the Establishment Clause. Even the most conservative judges would probably take some sort of umbrage to the fact that these prayers are always sectarian, always towards Jesus.
And just last week, there was a very strong decision out of the Fourth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals, which is Virginia, North Carolina, that area, absolutely reaffirming that and saying you cannot have sectarian prayers to open your government body. So those are worth pursuing. Well, we're running out of time, but let's talk about the Louisiana preacher that was endorsing candidates in violation of tax exemption requirements.
Right. So we got a complaint from someone who used to be a member of this pastor's church. And then this person basically had told us that this pastor has been endorsing candidates in Louisiana. Kathleen Blanco was one of them, and Bobby Jindal was another one, I think, when Bobby Jindal was running for the governorship, which you're not allowed to do under tax exemption status. As a church, you're allowed to do lobbying activities. So things like supporting Prop 8, which was like the gay marriage ban in California that the Mormon church was behind. Things like that, you can put some activity
towards.
Although
you have to follow state election law.
That's right. That's
and that
right.
can vary from state to state.
Right. But you can't endorse candidates. And right. It sounds like what this pastor was doing was endorsing candidates in violation. So we were able to work out some preliminary ideas, and hopefully the IRS is taking care of it now.
Yeah, and they never do tell you.
Right, yeah.
They always tell you, we won't actually respond to your complaint. Something may go public, or it might be a year later. Very,
right.
Very interesting how they work, very secretive. But so do you have any summation for your summer, or what's the state of state-church separation after working here? Or
The courts are getting much more conservative, which means that they're making their Establishment Clause cases harder to meet an actual violation, according to the review.
As in the Perry case.
Right, the Perry case. There's been a significant movement, at least from what I've gathered during the summer, that the conservative judges want to up the ante on the Establishment Clause burden of proof. And they want to apply some sort of coercion test, but they haven't been able to overthrow the Lemon test yet. So I think what they're trying to do, and this is just my personal opinion, is trying to throw in that coercion requirement into standing. That way we always get thrown out of court.
Well, we really appreciate all your hard work. It was a pleasure knowing you, working with you. This is your last week. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And we're listening to a little bit of Ash's favorite music, some of his favorite music, the Swedish metal band Opeth with a song called Devil's Orchard. God is dead. So stay tuned. We're going to talk with another young person. And thank you, Ash. We're going to be speaking with Jessica Ahlquist, who's a high school student who has had made some waves on state church separation in her Rhode Island high school. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we'll be right back with Free Thought Radio.
Hi, my name is Bob from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I'm on Free Thought Radio. I hope everyone that's listening gives a chance to listen to 1680 AM in Western Michigan.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney. In my new play, Letting Go of God, I come out clearly as an atheist, absolutely committed to keeping church and state separate. Won't you join me and the Freedom From Religion Foundation in waking up America to the growing dangers of theocracy? Phone 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. That's ffrf.org.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I am Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Our guest for this second half of Free Thought Radio is a 16-year-old high school junior, Jessica Ahlquist. She goes to Cranston High School West in Cranston, Rhode Island, and she is the principal plaintiff with her father in a lawsuit taken by the ACLU against her school district, challenging a prayer at her high school. And this is a prayer inscribed on the wall of the auditorium that addresses our Heavenly Father, ends with an amen, and is illegal. And the school has refused to budge, and so Jessica and her dad, Mark Ahlquist, are the plaintiffs in the legal challenge. And so we have Jessica on the phone with us. Welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Do you want to talk about how you first became aware of this prayer and this controversy?
Well, a friend of mine told me about it one day after school, and I was very curious, so I went to go look at it myself. And when I saw it, I was surprised and a little bit upset. And I thought about whether it was legal or not for quite a while over the summer between my freshman and sophomore years. And over that summer, someone else made a complaint. A parent had seen it at an event that her children were going to be at, and she complained to the ACLU. So then it was in the paper, and that's really how I heard about it from there.
So why would something like that, a prayer to our Heavenly Father that ends with amen, why would you be upset by something like that?
Well, the prayer represents our school. It represents all of the students within it. And if I don't agree with the religious message that the school is claiming all of us share, then I don't feel as though I belong in that school.
So you caught that devil's advocate question. But so, Jessica, do you consider yourself an atheist?
I do.
And so then you said that the ACLU wrote a letter to the school. I understand there was a school board meeting or a hearing about this that you attended?
After the ACLU got the letter, they decided to put together a subcommittee about the issue to discuss what they were going to be doing about it. And so I went to those meetings and got involved that way.
So they had to have a subcommittee to decide whether they would obey the law or not. By the way, Jessica, I heard you at the Secular Student Alliance Conference in Columbus, Ohio last week, and you were the star of the show. I think you were one of the youngest people there. You and Duncan, high schoolers, and yet the college students were really impressed with, your calmness and your bravery and your outspokenness and your fearlessness in challenging a violation of the First Amendment.
Thank you. That was actually the second talk I've ever done, and I was very nervous to do it.
You didn't sound nervous. You sound like a pro.
Thank you.
Now, so when did this lawsuit get filed? I'm a little unclear about the chronology.
The lawsuit was officially filed in April, but we had been discussing it for a while.
Oh, in April of this year?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought it had been... Okay, so the complaint had been going on for about a year, but the lawsuit is relatively new.
Yes.
And
the complaint was back in July, last July.
And when you testified at the subcommittee hearing, what did you tell them?
I told them that as an atheist student, this prayer discriminated against me, and I didn't feel as though it belonged in my school.
And what kind of reaction did you get at the time from the subcommittee? I mean, was there any...
The subcommittee itself was not hostile, really. It was more so the people who had been in attendance who really wanted the prayer to stay, who were offensive and mean, actually, at some points. When I said I was an atheist, people started to whisper, and someone actually gasped, and it was not a very welcoming atmosphere because of the people who wanted the prayer to stay.
They were like parents of the other students?
Not so much. There might have been one or two there, but more so it was these two politicians from Providence who showed up, and they were very outspoken and very passionate, but also, again, quite hostile.
Isn't it amazing when you're very young to have had that experience where your atheism comes up in a public meeting and you hear people gasping? Hmm. I mean, it's almost too much.
I certainly didn't expect it. I knew that being an atheist wasn't exactly accepted in society, but I didn't know that it was just completely unacceptable. I didn't, you know, I thought maybe they would see me as a little bit different, but I didn't think they would just outright hate me for it.
And who were these, when you say politicians from Providence, are we talking city, state, government level?
Their names are Christopher Young and Kara Russo. They run, but they've never actually been elected. So, I mean, they're very interesting people. They're very conservative, very, very religious, and their campaigns seem to be entirely based on the fact that they want more God in the government.
So here's another devil's advocate question. The town of Providence, Rhode Island, was named because of God's providence, right? So if you can have a city called Providence, are you going to sue to change the name of Providence, Rhode Island? What would you say to right-wingers who use arguments like that? If you can have a city named Providence for God, then what about a prayer in a high school?
Well, I think that something like that is quite clearly historic. People have tried to say that the prayer is historic, but it's not known. It's not known that this is like an old thing that was put up way back when, and it doesn't actually count anymore. Some people have tried to say that it doesn't actually, it's not endorsed by the school. It's just a piece of history that's in our school, and it's just there because it's historic and people want to see it stay to preserve our history.
Jessica, how long that prayer has been painted on the wall of the auditorium?
We don't know anything for sure, but it said that it was a gift from the graduating class of 1963.
So, an unconstitutional gift. And so, I guess all the kids play. Is the auditorium used for both gym and lunchroom, that kind of thing?
It's actually a separate building. It's strictly the auditorium. We do plays in there, things along that, along those lines. And, I mean, we're in there all the time. So it is something that comes up quite a bit.
So kids have just been confronted with that since 1963. How many years is that, Dan?
Almost 50 years. But wasn't that around the time of the Shemp decision and the Torcaso decision?
Almost 60 years, isn't it?
Yeah, since the time of, about 50 years. That was about the time when these bad decisions were being made after McCarthyism in the 50s, In God We Trust and all that. So it was part of that same religious mania, wasn't it?
I think so. No one really knows for sure, though, exactly how it got there. We don't know really who approved it, why it's there, why this was the gift that the class decided to give. A lot of the history about how it originally came to be there is very fuzzy now. And, I mean, that's all part of the lawsuit at this point, but it's very interesting.
Well, it is not uncommon with symbols in violation of the law that we find that. It's so hard to document exactly how it got there. Now, how did this lawsuit get there? I imagine that you and the ACLU, people were complaining, and the school was dilly-dallying, and finally the ACLU decided this wasn't going to get fixed unless there was a lawsuit?
Sort of. They had the subcommittee formed, and then from there, there was discussion. There were several meetings, which I spoke at, opposing the prayer, where the huge majority was definitely in favor of keeping the prayer. And at the end, the entire school committee, not just the subcommittee, but the full school committee, voted to keep the prayer. It was 4-3. And as a result of voting to keep the prayer up, the ACLU then decided to sue the school.
Well, we are talking with Jessica Alquist, who is the brave high school plaintiff in a lawsuit challenging religion in her Cranston, Rhode Island high school. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. We'll be right back and we'll find out how Jessica has been received by classmates since this lawsuit was filed.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we have on the phone with us Jessica Alquist, who's been talking about how she ended up suing her high school over a prayer painting in the school auditorium. And we just left off, Jessica, where the ACLU and you and your father had filed suit in April, and what we are dying to know about is the reaction, what it's been like. Have you had problems because of notoriety over this?
Have you lost any friends?
Well, I faced a bit of backlash from my school and my classmates. As far as friends goes, I'm lucky enough to have about, two or three friends who do identify as atheists, who have definitely supported me through all of this. I have maybe lost a few friends, but I wouldn't really necessarily consider them friends anyway. So I think I've come out of this quite lucky. As far as backlash goes, I remember the morning after the lawsuit was filed, I was in homeroom, and there were people talking about the lawsuit and how silly they thought it was and everything. And when we stood to say the Pledge of Allegiance, people in the homeroom turned and yelled "Under God" at me. And I just remember feeling really awful, and that was the first day the lawsuit was filed, and it just continued to really get worse from there. People started yelling things when I walked down the hall, like "Amen" or like "God loves you," and I was just trying to get through my day at school, and it wasn't pleasant for me at all anymore. And I remember at one point I was walking up my driveway after school, and people drove past and started yelling about the prayer out the window at me. And that was especially scary because I was afraid that they now knew where I lived, mm-hmm. and I was worried about my family, my little siblings, and that was very frightening also.
Well, and also just taunting you and rude, and it shows the injury to you as a high schooler to have that prayer in the auditorium, because it has turned you into an outsider and the religious students into the in-group, and they feel free to persecute you. And so that might be part of testimony that may come up in the trial or in the litigation.
Well, that's the whole point of the divisiveness of religion and the importance of the First Amendment. You are the American. You are defending the U.S. Constitution. They are the ones who are breaking the law. But look what happens. The tables get reversed.
It is quite upsetting. And they use things like the Pledge of Allegiance, for example, to tell me that I'm wrong and that this is a Christian nation. And I know better than that. And I've tried to explain that to them, but they're very close-minded, and it's very difficult to communicate with these people.
Well, I don't think there's any way that the school district can prevail in this litigation. They're just plain wrong. So where is the litigation at this point?
It's very difficult to explain right now.
Oh.
I'm not exactly supposed to be talking about most of it because it's somewhat confidential, and it's very fuzzy as to what I can and can't talk about. But it is moving along, and as difficult as it has been, I'm quite excited about it because I would really like to see this come to a conclusion soon and maybe pave the way for other cases similar to it.
And, of course, when you mentioned Under God and the Pledge of Allegiance being kind of thrown at you, that is something that was a Johnny-come-lately. It didn't used to be in the pledge, and it's something that FFRF and others have litigated. So far, not with any success, but our argument is that if there is a violation of religion and government that is permitted, then it is always used as precedent to excuse worse violations, and I think your case really shows how that works.
Yeah, and I certainly would like to see things like that removed also. I don't say it because of that, and I don't feel like it belongs there, and again, in public schools, and it's not right because it's supposed to represent all Americans, and it's actually discriminating against a very large minority of them.
And your family, are they all non-religious like you?
Mostly. My mother identifies as a spiritual person, but my siblings, they have never really been brought up traditionally, and as far as religion goes, and our family as a whole is not religious.
And were you just kind of allowed to think for yourself and nothing was foisted on you? You weren't...
Oh, absolutely. All my life I was encouraged to ask questions and to think freely. And I think that definitely has helped me in deciding what I believe in religiously.
You know, there are religious people who think that if you were brought up in a non-religious home, that basically it's like an anti-Sunday school and you're... propagandized and proselytized for atheism, and that's not how it works when you use your critical faculties, is it?
Well, you were raised that way, Annie Laurie.
I was raised to be very open-minded and to just accept people. You know, I learned about like fairness and acceptance and equality and just all different things that you think that your kids should be learning with religion. But it usually ends up having the opposite effect.
Now, there are high schoolers and college students who listen to this radio show. What would you say to them if they have a state church issue in their school? Would you encourage them to go ahead, or what would you recommend to them?
Well, I remember when Damon Fowler told me that after seeing a video of me on YouTube and the lawsuit that was filed, he was kind of inspired to fight his own prayer in his school. And, you know, I did feel bad at some point for, inspiring him to fight something that then got him kicked out of his house and got him so much trouble with his community and his school. But after thinking about it for a while, I realized that he's probably in a better place now than he was before, and that unless we fight every single violation that we come across, we're not going to be the force that we hope to be, and that people are going to continue thinking that they can continue to walk all over us, and no one's ever going to stick up for themselves. And I think that's the big problem here. A lot of times, religious anti-American people will try to say that non-religious Americans do not deserve the same rights. And they're not saying it in that exact context, but they are saying in a lot of ways that they wish we would just quiet, go away, and just accept that we're in the minority and don't deserve the same rights.
Well,
and that's very upsetting.
Well, you are definitely doing the right thing, and we congratulate you. You're going to be one of our 6 this year, Student Activist Awardees. And if you liked what you heard, you can hear more at the 34th Annual National Convention of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Hartford, Connecticut in early October, where Jessica will be speaking and joining the roster of speakers there. So you can get more information at fffref.org. Go to our outreach for events. So thank you so much, Jessica.
Thank you.
August the 11th is the birthday of Robert G. Ingersoll, born in 1833, the famous agnostic orator. He'll be 178 years old this week, and he had a creed, which is a secular creed, which I set to music. And let's just listen to a little bit in honor of Robert G. Ingersoll.
Justice is the only worship. Love is the only priest. Ignorance is the only slavery. Happiness is the only good. The time to be happy is now. The place to be happy is here. The way to be happy is to make others happy. The time to be happy is now.
And those are the words of Robert G. Ingersoll. If you want to hear the whole song, it's on the FFRF CD, Friendly Neighborhood Atheist. So thank you, Brian, for again producing.
And we want to thank Ash, our legal intern, and Jessica Alquist for being guests.
And we're going out with a little bit more of that Opeth music. What do you call that, Ash? Is that progressive metal?
Yeah.
He calls it progressive metal. They have a tune, The Devil's Orchard, where they say, God is dead. So we also want to thank our announcer, Buzz Kemper. This show is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. Go to fffrf.org/radio for archives and the podcast.
Ask for more information about FFRF at 1-800-335-4021 or go to fffrf.org. Join us. Help us. Support us. Support our Student Activist Awards, our litigation, and our radio show. And tune in next week for more blasphemous broadcasting and rational radio.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.
I'm not able to take that encouragement right now, so at the tone, please leave your name and a message. Thanks.